Good afternoon, everyone. Anyone who has a cell phone, including me, need to put it on silent? No, I can't find my phone. Okay, we'll pause for a second because last time I said that, mine rang. And well, where is it? Oh, sorry. Guess that comes with age. You forget where you put everything. All right. So now I figured out someone taught me how to turn this down. No, go off. I'll figure it out. Okay. Thank you. Okay, so we'd like to welcome all to the February 11th meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. You want to add anything?
Say March 11th, 2026.
I guess I should have written that down. March 11th. Is it March 11th? Because it's the same as February 11th. All right, I took this job under protest, so here I am. meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, economic, and general welfare of the city of Savannah. The board is appointed by city council, is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards are established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes and new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a certificate of appropriations appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decision. And as I indicated, please mute your phones. Okay, regarding sign postings, members of the board received packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the project. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Are there any projects that have not been posted? Staff, anybody? Okay. Hearing none, we'll move on to the consent agenda. The consent agenda are items that have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. So I'm going to read the consent agenda so everybody knows what they are. And item number one is petition of Russell Finland, 26000090 COA 409 East Hall Street. Number two, petition of Studio MC and G Architecture, Jennifer McConnelly, Gipso, 260007 13 COA 2-14 East Bryant Street. Petition of Whitfield Signs, LLC 260004 COA 15 West Broughton Street, illuminated sign. Number four, petition of Michael Roach, Coastal Contracting, 260064 COA, 301 East Huntington Street, window replacements. Petitions of Signs of the South, 26-000723 COA, 31 West Congress Street, non-illuminated sign, color change and awnings. And number six, petition of Doug Green signs 26000674 COA 33 Bull Street, illuminated sign. And number seven, petition of Sotil and Sotil LLC, Craig Clements, 26000712 COA 3 West Gordon Street, rehab and alterations. Okay, so is there anyone on the board or in the public would like have any consent items removed to the regular agenda?
Chairman, Ms. Woodfield, I'd like to ask that item number 5, petition of Signs of the South, 26-000723 COA, and item number 6, petition of Doug Bean Signs, 26-000674 COA, be moved to the beginning of the regular agenda.
Both of them. Okay. Any other comments in the public?
I just have a suggestion.
Yeah.
When can I, is it possible for me to make a motion to move number 14 on the regular agenda to the beginning so that.
Beginning following the ones that were just.
Yes.
Yeah. You can, I guess.
Okay.
Go ahead and make it.
Okay. Motion to move item number 14 to the beginning of the agenda. The regular agenda.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to move number 14 to earlier in the agenda behind the two moved consent items. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. All right. So now that I think we've established what the consent agenda is, and I have a motion to approve the consent agenda items 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7.
Rowan, so moved.
The second?
Gwen, second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve consent agenda items 1, 2, 3, 4, and 7. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. All right, now let us move to the adoption of the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the agenda as modified?
Can you just clarify the order of the agenda again? So it's 5, 6, 14, and then?
5, 6, 14, and 13.
Okay, thank you.
Not counting the minutes and stuff like that. Okay, so was there a motion? I didn't hear it. Okay.
Woodfield, second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to adopt the agenda for today. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. All right. Now the minutes. Minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the February 11th minutes? Good, right.
Rowan, so moved.
Okay, it's been moved for approval.
Hamer, second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded for approval of the February 11th meeting minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. So guess we are on the regular agenda, if I'm following this right. Pardon me? Oh, pardon me. Do we vote on the continued agenda? We do? Okay, so there are having trouble flipping pages here. Adoption, approval, continued agenda. There are three items on the continued agenda. Petition of Brick House Interiors, 26000695 COA, 402-408 Bull Street, color change. Petition of Rose Architects, Kevin Rose, 250056 74 COA 402 East Broughton Street, New Construction Part 1. Petition of Robert Johns, 250-06062 COA 207 Bull Street, Alterations ADA Ramp. So do you have a motion to approve the continued agenda?
Gwen, so moved.
Rowan, second.
And moved and second to approve the continued agenda. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. All right. Thank you, Mr. Coleman, the experienced chairman among us. All right, so now we're on the regular agenda. So the first agenda item will be now number 5 from the consent agenda, petitions of Science of the South. And I guess Alex is our man of the moment.
All right. Good afternoon, Chairman, members of the board. My name is Alex, here representing the MPC. So 31 West Congress Street. First and foremost, the applicant would like to change the exterior paint color, reupholster, and change the color of the 3 front awnings and install signage, including a non-illuminated wall sign, translucent window stripes, and an entry door logo. Let me just pull this up so everyone can see. All right, so just for a little bit of context, the building was constructed in 1851 and is a contributing resource. The address is part of a 3-story commercial building located at the corner of Congress and Whitaker, with storefronts that wrap around the ground floor on both streets. It sits across Congress from the parking lot and drive-through ATM of a contributing bank building and next door to a non-contributing commercial building. So here, let me just zoom in so you can see a little bit better. Here's the current condition as it currently stands. This right here is showing the color change and the awnings. And somewhere along here is the entire project as projected with the sign. Now, the colors and signage of this storefront and of the building as a whole have changed multiple times in the past, so the proposed changes will not affect the historic features or character of the building, and the sign and awnings can all be removed, and the color can be changed in the future if necessary. So in terms of the color change, similar pastel style, light blue, light greenish colors have been used in many storefronts in the area currently and over the years. Here are just a few examples. This is 126 Broughton, which is in the adjacent ward. This is 36 West Broughton, which is in the same ward at the other end of the block. And this is 103 West Congress, which is at the same intersection. Also, just for a little bit of historical context with the color, this is Broughton Street, circa somewhere around the 50s or 60s, with a similar color storefront here on the right. And in terms of the signs, there are multiple wall signs of a similar style and size within the ward and adjacent wards, including the immediately adjacent storefront of Angle and Volkers, seen right here. And this is just another example around the corner, Flock to the Walk, which is a similar style sign in the adjacent ward. So just in terms of specs, the awnings have a vertical clearance of 8 feet above the sidewalk. And the existing awning supports are being retained. And now in terms of the size of the signage, I know that was there was a little bit of concern regarding that in the pre-meeting. For the window signs, according to the ordinance, the sum of such window signs shall not exceed 10% of the window area of the facade. And each window sign will be, it covers less than 10% of its given window. And with the total window area coverage coming out to 7.6%, that does meet the standard. And in terms of the wall sign above the entrance, according to the ordinance, the aggregate sign area shall not exceed a size of more than 1 square foot of sign area per linear foot of lot frontage along a given street, or shall meet the following size requirements, whichever is the most restrictive. Now, this is in the CBD zoning district. So the maximum sign area for a wall sign is 40 square feet. However, in this case, the linear lot frontage of this proposed storefront is 30 feet. And the total area of the wall sign will be 27.88 square feet. So that also does meet the, that standard is met. Now, with all of that being said, I can find it here. Staff does recommend to approve the work proposed for 31 West Congress Street as requested because it is visually compatible and meets the standards. So thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Alex, before we get into that, I forgot a little bit of the spiel we needed to do before you got up there.
All right.
So during the regular agenda, staff, as we just did, will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have an opportunity to respond to the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address the items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance and questions raised by the board. The public will then have an opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to public comments. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairman. We will structure the board discussion by going around each board member two times for comment, and the board members don't have to provide comments if they don't have any. If you are, do we have any remote ones today, Hein?
Yes, sir, plenty.
We do? Okay, so for the person that is joining virtually, locate your control panel and let us know it's your time to speak, and we'll get you turned on. Okay, so are there any comments for or questions for staff? No questions for staff?
Woodfield? Oh. Did you receive a color chip for this color?
So I did speak with the – yes, I did, actually. Yeah, I'll come pass it around.
Okay, any other questions for Alex? Okay, so there's a petitioner here to would like to make a presentation.
I think you've done an excellent job. I'd be delighted to answer any
questions. Come on up to the microphone and give us your name, please.
I think he's done an excellent job of showing the design and situation at this particular spot. I'd be happy to answer any questions I can. I'm Deborah Bowen, and I own Signs of the South.
Any questions for the petitioner? Okay, I'm checking the speaker card to see if we have anybody signed up for this item. It appears not. Is anyone in the public who would like to speak on this matter? Okay. How about the virtual person? They want to speak?
No, sir. None for this one.
Pardon me?
No one for this one.
Okay. All right. So now we will close discussion to the staff, board, and public. I mean, the public and the applicant and the board members will have an opportunity to comment. Ms. Gwynn, do you want to start today?
Sure, no comment.
Finished?
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Brawler?
I agree with staff's recommendation to approve.
And Ms. Wolfield?
Thank you. I asked to move this to off the consent agenda because I was concerned about the size of the sign. The original sign proposed was 40 square feet, which is enormous. It's been reduced. It's now within the allowed sign, 27.88. We've double-checked that the sign sizes on the windows are appropriate, and now we've seen the color sample. So my concerns are allayed. Thank you very much for the work and bringing that in. Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Hammer?
No comment.
Helms, no comment.
Well, Mr. Helms, there. Okay. I don't think we have to go around again. So is there a motion by a board member?
Nagel?
Okay.
I move that the Historic District Board of Review approve the petition number 2600 COA. Lost the building address. Sorry. File number 2600723-COA for 31 West Congress Street as the petition meets the standards and is visually compatible.
Okay, there's been a motion by Ms. Nagel to approve the petition as...
Gwynn, second.
Was that Gwynn? Okay. And it's been seconded. So I guess, Ms. Gwynn, will you start the voting, please?
Sure. Aye.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Coleman?
Aye.
Brawler?
Aye.
Wolfield?
Aye.
Hammond?
Hamer, aye.
Hey, Mr. Helms?
Aye.
Long way down. Okay, it's been successfully approved. We were ready to move on to the petition of Doug Green, which was number 6 on the consent agenda for 33 Bull Street. I guess Caitlin is the...
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting this project. The applicant's requesting approval to install one double-sided internally lit projecting parking sign at the parking garage on 33 Bull Street. The sign will match those found on other city public parking garages. 33 Bull Street is a non-contributing resource and is a commercial multi-use building that sits on the corner of Bull Street and Broughton Street. Staff found with regard to the standards that the sign, this met the sign standards for DCBD zoning. And we considered that section 9.9.6 about sign illumination, the sign is enclosed in the cabinet with an opaque background, not to cast light directly onto the street or any adjacent property. The building is not across the street from residential and is zoned in a commercial district. For internally illuminated signs, the ordinance says they should be individually illuminated or having an opaque background. So if the sign has an opaque background, the sign would extend 5 feet from the building to which it is attached, which is within the 6 feet that's allowed, and it is 12 feet from the sidewalk. So that meets the 8-foot minimum. This is kind of a wayfinding sign for the parking garages in the city. This applicant has, I believe, designed the other ones for this. So their signage was just meant to match the other public parking garages that are in the city. So with that, staff does recommend approval as requested because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. I'll be happy to either answer any questions or turn it over to the applicant.
I intend to make a motion that we kick this back to staff, and staff just confirms this sign is the same as all the other parking signs that we have in the city.
Well,
Excuse me, Chair. Can you turn on your microphone?
Thought it was on.
Thank you.
Okay. Can you hold that motion until we get to that point in the meeting?
Yes.
Ms. Woodfield, you were going to make
comment. Well, I have the same sort of question, and I don't know that Caitlin can answer it right now, but it is also my concern that there are multiple of these signs around the city and that they're all the same size and that, you know, they're regular. So
perhaps the applicant.
Yeah, we were of that understanding, but the applicant may be able to confirm.
Yeah, let's see if there are any questions for you. Any more questions for Caitlin? Okay, would the applicant like to come forward and speak?
I don't know if they're here or online. It might be Doug Bean or Angela Bean online.
I don't see Doug Bean out there.
Okay.
No. Okay, well, I guess my rule of no applicant, no action might be in force here today. So let's run around and see if there are any comments before we move to the next step. Mr. Helms?
Comment.
Ms. Hammer?
No comment.
Ms. Woodfield?
No additional comment.
Ms.
I agree with staff's recommendation to approve.
Ms. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
No comment.
Ms. Gwynn?
No comment.
Okay, so any other comments of the board? All right, we'll move to the next step. Anybody would like to make a motion?
Helms, I would like to move that the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve conditionally the petition of MPC file 25-006674 COA for 33 Bull Street to put up a sign, and the condition being that staff confirm with the applicant that this sign is identical to all the other parking signs that we have in the city. As long as it's identical, I move that we approve it without further review by the board.
So Mr. Helms, the motion is to approve the proposal with the condition that staff will determine that the sign is that's being proposed is the same size as the other signs that are parking in the area. Is there a second?
Woodfield, second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. I'll start with Mr. Helms.
Aye.
Ms. Hammer?
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield?
Aye.
Aye.
Nagel, aye. Gwynn, aye.
Thank you. So it's been moved and seconded and approved pending the staff review of the determining the sign is the same size as other signs for parking in the city. Okay. Now we move to item 14, the petition of Homestead Architecture, 317 East Jones Street, rear addition, moved ahead of the other item in the agenda. Caitlin, is that you too? Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is Caitlin again. We are going to pull this up over here. Now, the applicant is requesting approval to install an addition at the rear of the building located at 317 East Jones Street. The proposed addition would be attached to an existing non-historic addition at the rear. The request also includes the installation of two new doors on the front elevation, as well as a color change for the front portico and window trim. So 317 East Jones Street was built in 1868 and is obviously a contributing resource. It is on the left end of the three attached brick row homes, which if this ever catches up, I will show you. Okay. All right, there we go. So 317 is here on the left, or on the right if you're looking at it from the lane where the addition will be proposed. All three houses have been altered on the rear elevation over time, which is evidenced by the Sanborn maps. The 1888 map shows a one-story wood porch on the rear. By 1898, is noted as a two-story wood porch. Bring you back to that. The current configuration of the rear elevation is wood lap siding infill on the former porches, creating interior spaces. The rear elevations of the two connecting properties have been altered further in the last 20 years based on COA records. So the proposed addition, just going through some of our standards that we evaluate this by, it's on the rear of the building on an area that has been altered, such as the former porch that was enclosed with the lap siding. The addition will not be visible from the front of the building on Jones Street, where much of the character-defining features are observed. The row house form will be maintained. The addition will be differentiated by materials and height. It does not overpower the historic house. So these are just some existing condition photos. Right, this is this one right here. You can see how there's been alterations to all three, though, over time. There's some context in the surrounding areas of different rear additions in the lane and in the vicinity. So as built, you can see where the ground level opens out to a courtyard. Currently, the parlor level has a kitchen addition, and then it opens out to a back deck. And then the second follows that same design. So when you see the plan for the site, it would be to demo that back deck area. And within that space will be where the addition is proposed to go. So this would be the floor, the second floor plan and ground and parlor level plans here. Side elevation kind of shows that this will be maintained on the house. There'll be a corner board that will be right at the very edge of what exists to include the addition beyond that. There'll be hardy plank siding and a metal roof to help differentiate this from the existing building. Here is kind of a massing diagram that gives a good kind of visual of that. This is still under the 75% lot coverage. Staff found overall that the standards were met for this project. For the front doors on the main part of the house, they are not original to the building, and the doors on all three addresses in the row, which can be seen over various dates on Google Street View and in current real time, are all different from each other. The proposed doors are appropriate and similar to others on the block. So the only condition, though, is going to be for the addition. A set of sliding glass French doors are proposed here. Though this elevation faces the lane rather than the street, it would be visible from the Habersham view, most likely. So staff recommends selecting a different door style that meets the standard, whether it's just French doors that aren't sliding, just to be aligned with the ordinance. And with that, staff does recommend approval to install an addition, new front doors, and the color change for the front portico and window trim at 317 East Jones Street with the following condition to be submitted to staff for review and approval because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. So that would be selecting an approved door type on the addition to replace the proposed sliding glass doors. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for staff? Okay, hearing none, would ask the applicant to come up.
Good afternoon. My name is Pete Callejas, Homestead Architecture. Thank you, Caitlin. Thank you, members of the board, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. We feel that because of the client's request of wanting to have sliding doors, a lot of reason is just to not have to dedicate so much floor space to a swinging door on a very expensive and very valuable construction project where in this day and age everything is so expensive. So they wanted to try to utilize as much space as possible. So we designed the sliding doors to appear to be two separate French style doors. And so the client has asked that we try to maintain that if possible. We feel that because it's on the back of a non-existing, it's on the back of a non-historic addition, it's going to be very difficult to see underneath the roof and in the shade of the porch, and it's only facing the rear. We're hoping to maintain that we keep that sliding glass door because, and for all intents and purposes, no one's going to be able to see that it's a sliding door or a French door just because it's going to look exactly the same. However, we don't want to fall on our sword. If that's something that the board feels is an important requirement, we'll acquiesce, but the client asks that we try to maintain that if possible. Other than that, we're here to answer any questions.
Okay. Board members have any questions of the applicant? Guess not. Okay. Thank you. Is anyone from the public who'd like to get up and speak on this application? Okay, hearing none, nobody online? Okay.
No, sir.
Okay, thank you. Okay, so now we'll open, unless staff has a follow-up to the sliding door. No? Okay. Now we'll open it up for board discussion. Mr. Helm, would you like to start, please?
I'm actually okay with the idea that it's a sliding door, unless it's something that we really need to insist on French doors because of the ordinance. But this is in the back of a house. I don't think it's that visible.
Before we move on, would you like to respond to that? It was sort of a question about the ordinance. Is it?
Sure. Yeah, that was basically just something in the section about doors on new construction additions is prohibited materials. It does say sliding doors visible from a street. So we were looking at the perspective, trying to make sure everything was covered. And this may just be something in board discussion too that gets decided, but we were looking at it from Habersham because it can be seen that it may be considered visible from a street.
Could you point out with your cursor which building it is?
This
one. Okay. So it's on the first floor where the sliding glass doors are, right?
Yes.
And there's an extension being built off of that, right?
Right.
Okay. All right. So Ms. Hammer, your turn.
Just reviewing the ordinance, it does say prohibited sliding glass doors. I think this is another thing that could be added to our laundry list of items that we need to review in our ordinance. Because I do agree with the applicant, they do appear to be simulated divided light doors. They're not the traditional full light sliding glass doors, which is what we often associated with new construction. So, but because our ordinance does specify no sliding glass doors without the specificity of saying simulated divided lights or like you're showing would be allowed, we have to follow the ordinance. And I agree with staff's recommendation.
Ms. Woodfield?
I think it's a tasteful addition. I think the massing and the porch makes sense where it's located. So I have no trouble with the massing or the style or the color or the material. I had a concern because it's fiberboard and we usually ask for wood, but because this is new construction and it's the back of the building, this is allowed, this James Hardy material, the color we found appropriate. So the issue of the sliding doors, I don't believe it's going to be very visible under that canopy that far from the street and with all the activity that goes along that lane, because there are, you know, there's traffic along that lane and parking nearby. So those are my comments. There is a privacy wall, but I think that's, we haven't talked about that, but I think that's fine because this is, keeping it some distance from the neighbor left to them. And, I think it's a good thing and it's seen in the neighborhood. So, I think everything is fine and I support the proposal and I could, support the sliding glass doors. Thank you.
Ms. Rowan?
I agree with Ms. Whitfield's comments, and I don't have a problem with the sliding glass doors as they appear to be French, and they're under the porch, so I don't think they'll be that visible.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Ms. Nagel?
I don't have, I understand the ordinance states what it states, and I think this is a great example of when, you know, the applicant is trying to fall under what visibly would be compatible, which is great. And I see the constrictions you would have with the swing being on a porch, so you have to swing in. I think this is one of those situations where if it's visually compatible, it mimics what a French door would look like. It's on the back, new addition. I would be inclined to say, you know, this is a good example of when something could easily be passed. My concern is more with the front door. Can we just look at the front door for a second? Because we're adding a door where there is a light. There's a transom above the original door, but now we're adding a door that has six lights under the transom, which doesn't seem to be a very, fitting with the what the front door would have been like or would have ever been like. It's looking very stylistically, I don't know that door is a good choice as a front door of a historic home on Jones Street. I don't know that I've ever seen a door with the six lights on top of beneath the transom light. There's a lot going on there. I think stylistically, I would not be in agreement with the front door. However, I'd be fine with the two sliding doors in the back mimicking French doors. Thank you.
Gwen, no comment.
Okay. Ms. Gwen?
No comment.
Oh, no comment. Okay. I do have a question for staff on that. I'm confused about which door I'm looking at right now. Is that the proposed door?
This is a proposed door. This is what exists currently. We found the COA that this was changed in, I think, 2008. So this door is also not historic. And as you can see, multiple changes have occurred.
Since your recommendations talk about the door, I forgot.
I mean, our recommendation was that we found that it worked, but we were going for recommending approval.
For the door?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Thank you. Mr. Helms, would you like to go again? No.
No comment.
No comment. Ms. Hammer?
No further comment.
Your mic on? Because I had trouble hearing it a minute ago.
Yes. Can you hear me now?
No. Okay. Ms. Whitfield?
Now that you've pointed it out, I see that this is really more of a prairie-style door. A craftsman, and Jones is very particular about their details. So it might be wise to have a condition that we need to see another door style and just approve it. And maybe staff can do that. But I agree. This is a pretty routine door that doesn't really belong on such a prestigious street. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
Mr. Coleman?
No comment.
Nagel?
No comment.
Ms. Gwynn?
No comment.
So we're going around twice. Okay, so we're ready for a motion if anybody want to lead on that.
Nagel?
Okay.
I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition for file number 26000715-COA for 317 East Jones Street with the condition that the front door be revised and presented, a different option be presented to staff that would be more visually compatible and would meet the standards.
And the sliding door, did you have a comment on that? Staff's recommendation was not for the sliding door.
No, I don't have a comment on that because okay, I right. don't have a problem with the sliding okay. doors.
All right.
And Coleman seconds.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to approve the application for 317 East Jones Street. And
with the condition
about having an alternate front door approved by staff, and I guess, and the condition that the sliding glass doors be replaced.
I don't think that's been struck.
I'm reading this wrong. Approved door type.
She didn't include that in her motion. She did not include the staff condition. She added the condition about the front door.
Oh, I see. So that's why the sliding glass door remains. Okay, my apologies. So approved basically with the sliding glass door as a result of the way the motion was written, but a condition that the front door, alternative to front door be determined by staff. And we have a second by Mr. Coleman. We'll start on Ms. Gwynn's side.
Aye.
Ms. Nagel.
Aye.
Mr. Coleman.
Aye.
Ms. Rowan.
Aye.
Ms. Woodfield.
Aye.
Ms. Hammer.
Aye.
Mr. Elms.
Aye.
Okay, so it's been properly moved, seconded, and adopted. Thank you all on that. So now we are on item number, a lot of pages printed out here. Item number 13, petition of Kimberly Horn, 26000710 COA, multiple addresses, cell tower modifications. And Jody will explain the number of those that we have purview over, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Good afternoon, Jody Brown, for the cell tower antennas. The applicant is requesting approval for the removal of existing small cell equipment and subsequent installation of proposed updated small cell equipment. The applicant has submitted requests for 36 small cell antennas replacement to review for existing upgrades. Of the 36, only 4 of them are not located within the public right-of-way, plus one pole that that is allegedly not owned by the City of Savannah. All of the cell towers will be reviewed under Section 106 for the National Historic Preservation Act. The 4 cell towers that are not located within the public right-of-way, including the one pole not owned by the city, will be reviewed for this C of A, while the remaining 36, towers within the right-of-way are not within the purview of the Historic District Review Board. So this, and I'm just giving you an overview so you have a feel for all of them. This is all the proposed locations throughout the downtown core. This is, as they currently stand, there's on the left, I have a pointer. On the left, this is the current cell towers, and this is the proposed modification. With that, so the bulk of the work will consist of the addition of small cell antennas, which are right here. Hopefully you can see that. Small cell antennas on existing poles and the replacement of the cable shroud at the top, which is this at the top. Both above the light arm and a concealed fab radio shroud below the light arm. The overall height of the light poles will be modified slightly, and all new items will be painted to match the existing poles. The poles are utilitarian and generally located within landscape easements. They don't negatively impact the historic character of the district. And there are a number of old trees, though, that typically surround the existing poles, and care should be taken to protect the trees and limit any trimming to accommodate the new equipment. In one instance, particularly at 201 West Bay Street, the small cell antennas will co-locate on a Georgia Power wood pole. And at 201 East Bay Street, they will be removing an existing wood pole and installing a new metal light pole to match the others. On the ones that are within our purview, there are, starting with two of the properties, 621 Drayton, which is a contributing property within Forsyth Park, and 200 West Congress, which is a non-contributing resource on Ellis Square. They will have rooftop equipment replaced. At 621, and this is 621 right here, Drayton, an existing antenna, radios, and shroud will be replaced. The equipment is located on the south side of the building at the southeast and southwest corners. So it's both of these spots right here on top of the building. The antenna and radio are located inside the shroud and will not be visible. And the new shroud will be painted dark gray. So I just have the one picture on the side, but here it is as it exists right now. And you can kind of see it right here, the new shroud on top of it. But that'll be happening on both sides. 200 West Congress will also be located at the top of the building. That's not my 200 West Congress. Oh, this is my 200 West Congress. Will be located at the top of the building, similar to Drayton Street. The equipment is inside the shroud. So you actually, this is 200 West Congress. It's right there. This is the existing, and this is the proposed. The equipment at West River Street, which is this one, which is a non-contributing resources located within an existing sign. The sign will remain for this application. So you can see the sign right here, and it's just going to stay in there. And then finally, at 110 East State Street, which is also a non-contributing building, which is our building, the equipment is located at the southeast and southwest corners of the building on the third floor. So I personally never noticed them, and when I got this application, I actually looked up and saw them. The existing equipment will be removed and replaced with slightly larger antenna in the same location. Again, all the proposed equipment will have limited impact on the historic resource and the district as a whole. Staff recommends, I forgot about this one. This is the light pole at 111 Barnard that the city allegedly does not own. This is on a corner here. Again, it exists. Here's a light pole as it stands now. And here's the light pole with the small cell antenna and the replaced shroud at the top. My apologies for that. And then staff recommendation to approve the request to replace the cell tower equipment for the properties located at 621 Drayton Street, East River Street, 200 West Congress Street, 110 East State Street, and 111 Barnard as requested, because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Board members have any questions of staff?
Gwen.
No, Gwen, sorry.
Sorry, many questions. It's curious that the way that this was submitted to us, and I'm glad that there's clarification on the number of ones that we are reviewing, but I struggle with it because I think if you're looking at it just from a visual compatibility standpoint, when you're adding mechanical equipment and very visible areas or spaces or affixing them to buildings, they're not exactly visually compatible with what? I mean, they kind of stand out, right? Like it's not like it's an iron railing or a baluster. It's a non-historic piece of equipment. And so I think that while I do understand that there's a health and safety reason for needing this equipment, asking us to decide whether or not it's appropriate in certain instances seems silly. Like if there's a city policy on the installation of equipment and where it can and can't go, that would make more sense to me rather than us looking at like five of these things and saying like, maybe they are compatible, maybe they're not. Because I do think it is part of the visual fabric of the historic district. And when I look at it just from that standpoint, I would say that they are not visually compatible.
Thank you.
I know that wasn't exactly a question, but it doesn't seem like there's been any direction given to the MPC or staff on a specific policy from the city stating where they are appropriate, whether or not they're needed, or whether or not we're required to allow them, and we just need to decide the most appropriate way to do that.
I mean, really, you're reviewing them just like you would any other modification to any building structure that is in the downtown core. You do not typically review as per the code, you don't review items in the right of way. So if somebody's putting a new light pole or a new sign or something like that, that's not something that is within your purview.
Right. But if we review something like, for instance, a mechanical air conditioning unit, we require that it's screened and not visible from the public right of way. And so this to me would be, again, just from a visual compatibility standpoint, without understanding the city's stance and their policy on when, where, and how these things are installed and where they go.
Understood. And that is something, I mean, just like you had that discussion with the last item about the sliding glass doors, and whether or not they were visual or not visual from the public right of way, that would be something that you can pose to the applicant. Is there a way to disguise them? They've done it at the top with the shroud. The shroud is disguising antennas. So I don't see why you couldn't ask the applicant about, you know, doing more of a invisibility cloak, for lack of a better description, because shroud is already in that conversation, more than painting it, which is their go-to for making it kind of go away.
Yeah, I just think when you look at the volume of these things going throughout the historic district, even though we're only looking at five of them, it's a slippery slope. And if we say, you know, yes, you can put these shrouds on city-owned light poles or buildings, or, you know, I just think there needs to be a more clear policy from the city before we rule on whether or not something is visually compatible, understanding that we're only looking at five in a sea of 30, however many. But that's more of a comment, I guess, not a question to you. Sorry, Jody, I didn't mean to push this back on you, but
that's okay.
Give us an eagle.
I do have a question. Is there currently in place any, what is the contract that you know of with the city that would allow technology like this? So just sort of piggybacking on that, which I fully agree with. It's also, you know, what are we up against? What are the rules currently in place with the city, which must have some sort of contract with Verizon and all of these telecommunication companies for these things? So, you know, we can speak from a standpoint of visual compatibility. Like Ms. Quinn said, visual compatibility to historic matter that doesn't exist. That's a strange thing for us to opinionate on as a comparison. But then currently with the city, what are the contracts in place that we would have to accept? I guess where I'm going with this is how many more of these are going to come? So what's in place to say, hey, these are capped anyway. So then we're like, okay, fine. Not too big of a deal if we see a few. But if these are not capped or controlled in any way, and many other companies come and say, well, these were approved, we get to put up ours, then we have a problem.
Perhaps that's a question for the applicant.
Well, no, because staff should know about what, or could know if the city has any contract in place that allows these as in a capped version, or is there a limit to what these can be approved, or nothing?
That's really not actually in my purview. I mean, we're looking at, again, compatibility.
Right.
We're doing the Section 106 review that's required as part of the National Historic Preservation Act. I did see Jessica Baldwin, not to throw you under the bus, in the audience, and she may be able to, but she is not able to, and she is shaking her head.
So we don't really know if there is such a thing in place with the city, and I'm not saying that you should was the wrong word. I'm just asking if you do know of any.
I am not aware of any.
Okay. And then my second question was, are you aware of, and this will be asked to the applicant, but when this was presented to staff, of any issues that they have with placing these in a more conspicuous place rather than like slap on the side of a building on the right of way?
Well, as part of the, I think what you're asking, when we had the pre-app meeting or the pre-meeting, that typically when you have these 5G poles deployed, they have a certain amount of range, which is why you're seeing more of them instead of, and this is my understanding, the applicant may be able to address this better, but unlike that big one that's on, where is that?
Abercorn.
That's the old school one. When they deployed the 5G, they have a certain amount of range. And if you have obstacles in the way, that kind of blocks your range, which is why you see more of them now. And the proliferation of cell phones, everybody and their mother has a cell phone, well, except for my mother. Everybody has a cell phone. My mom has a landline. But you have the demand for it, demand for them to be faster and quicker and not to be out of coverage, because it is a life safety thing. If something happens that somebody needs them, which is why you're seeing so many of them, and because they're limited range. I expect and I hope one of these days when technology approves that these go away, and they have a greater range and they can disguise themselves better.
Thank you.
Mr. Holmes, I have an observation to make, and that is that one of the of these light posts that's being modified is at 208 East Oglethorpe Avenue, which is down the street from me. It took me probably 30 minutes to figure out what was going on that was going to be any different from what was there. And the answer was nah. So, I mean, I think that what they're proposing is by definition visually compatible because it's actually modifying things that are already there. If you assume that cell phones are necessary, then I'm inclined to go with the technical side that these are certainly from a visual point of view, they're visually compatible with what's already there.
Okay. I went to jump to the other end. I'll go school.
I just have one comment. Yeah. Like my limited knowledge is it's not like Verizon like has monopoly on all these cell phone towers. They have to allow the other cell companies to use them. So it's not like Verizon's going to put up 38 and then AT&T is going to come up and put 38 more around the city. So that's just my limited knowledge.
Mr. Chair.
Well, I can add to that real quickly. I was here when we had the first distribution of these Verizon towers, and that there is an agreement with the city that permits these, that requires them to allow access to other carriers. But I guess we got jumped all over the place. Ms. Woodfield?
I'll save my comments till we go around. I don't think I have a direct question for you.
Okay, Ms. Hammer.
My question was, can you confirm of all the instances in our purview, which are just being replaced in kind versus like a new application?
Can you repeat that?
Most of the equipment that we're reviewing is a replacement, correct? Like almost a one-for-one replacement of existing equipment in an existing location, correct?
As I understand it, I mean, I don't know that it's a one-for-one, but as I understand it, it is a replacement of existing equipment. It's outdated equipment. Poles have been there for quite some time, with the exception of the one pole that's a wood pole that's going to become a light pole.
Okay.
And the one that's the Georgia Power pole that's going to have equipment installed on top of it.
So it seems like most of the instances we're reviewing, there's precedent for equipment being there that wasn't necessarily meeting the ordinance.
The bulk of the equipment, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Cool.
No additional comment.
Okay, I guess come back since we started that. Any additional comments, Ms. Hammer?
I do have one more question for staff before we move on to comment. Just to clarify on what Ms. Hamer was asking, there are one or two instances where there is going to be a double pole and the old one's going to be left, or at least one. We were talking about it at the pre-meeting. There's one instance where there's going to be an additional pole rather than the one thing be replaced. There's going to be an additional thing added that is independent from the old one.
There's one wood pole. They're taking that out.
Okay.
They're putting in the light pole. And then there's one wood pole that has electric lines and stuff that they're going to co-locate the equipment on top of that wood pole.
So there's one instance where there will be one location where there's going to be two devices instead of one.
These are two different locations. So
it's happening in two places where there's going to be two pieces of equipment instead of one.
No, that's not what she said.
I'm just trying to clarify on that.
There's two places where there are modifications being made. One is to take a wood pole out and put in a metal pole, light pole.
So I guess I misunderstood in the pre-meeting where I thought there's one instance where there's going to be two devices instead of one.
That's the 110 State Street. There are.
Oh, 110 State Street has, this building has equipment at the southeast and the southwest corner. I may have not pointed correctly, but.
The existing is one in each, and okay. Now there's going to be two.
Got it. Thank you.
That is this. So I messed these up. Oh, so this is how it'll look. So currently there's only one box, one antenna on each side and one antenna, and then it's going to have two antennas, two antennas, two antennas like that. And I'm calling them antennas, but I may not have that technical term correct.
Okay. Good clarification.
After some, yes.
Okay, Ms. Gwynn?
Are we in board comment now?
Yeah, still in comments. No, we're still staff questions. Yeah, we're on staff questions. All right, any more questions for staff?
Did Mr. Coleman have a question? I lean forward.
Okay, I do have a couple questions for staff. Or one comment. Ms. Wilson told me on the way in here that the law was changed after my time and that now you have to allow the poles in the public right of way based on the state law. Do you know about that?
Yes.
Okay, so yes, that's true.
I have heard that too. I have not sat down to look at the state law.
All my speaker cards deal with 321 Abercorn Street. And is that one of the towers that we have purview over, or is that it just the city?
We do not. That is in the public right of way. There was comments that were added online too. Right. That were posted, and there was one that was not from 321 Abercorn.
Okay.
For Stanton, but that was online and it's posted.
Okay.
I don't know that he's here today.
All right. Thank you. 1-3-435 Habersham. I read it wrong.
Correct.
Okay. Is that one, which one is that one in the list on?
That is also in the public right of way.
Okay. Thank you. All right, so would the applicant like to come up and make a presentation, please?
That's Trevor Newton. He should be online.
The applicant's online.
Oh, are you here?
Yes. There's two of us.
Okay. We got two, one online and one here, so.
All right.
He's ready.
Trevor is speaking.
Yeah, I'll go first, Chris, and my apologies, board, for not being able to be present in person today. Just want to confirm, can you all hear me okay and clearly? Was that a yes? Sorry.
No.
Could you speak up, please?
Let me try getting closer. Good afternoon. Can you hear me better now?
No.
I'm going to try to call in from my phone to help the audio. Give me one quick second.
Anybody here?
He's going to call in by his phone, but Mr. Chairman, do you want to allow, while we're waiting for him to dial in, the person that's here in the audience to speak?
Yeah, that would be a good idea. Let's start with the Verizon, I guess. You said you're from Verizon. Do you get up and make a presentation as you'd like?
I do. Chris Milnes, Verizon Wireless.
You raise your mic up like that.
Okay, yeah, I'm a little tall.
Okay.
How you doing? Nice to meet you. First time here for representing Verizon. Trevor has a history. These modifications to the existing, we call them small cells. I know they're called on your presentation, they're called towers, but they're actually all small cells. They're all modifications, correct, except for the ones that were also repurposing the existing poles, the wood pole that you mentioned. Trevor does have the history. I did notice on that, on the parking garage out here, I know there was one comment that was related to screening. We can screen around those antennas too. So we can make like a brick facade that looks like to match the brick here to cover those antennas. So that's one thing we can do. I noticed in the presentation. He has a history with it. So I'll let Trevor.
Can you guys hear me? Hear me a lot better now?
Yeah, we're going to hear you now, Trevor. So if you don't mind, I'll let him speak because he does have most of the history for the previous installs. And then and if there's any questions, then obviously I can come back and answer on behalf of Verizon. Thank you.
Hey, yes, and my apologies for my poor audio at first, but do want to confirm it's clear now. You guys can hear me a lot better. Okay, yeah, so I didn't hear everything Chris said when I was switching over, but did want to just touch on a couple things that I heard throughout the staff comment period and maybe reiterate one thing, especially that these are modifications, whether it's the ones in your purview or the ones in public right-of-way, which I understand we're not reviewing today. All of these locations are existing. This is merely an equipment swap to get the next gen of equipment on these assets to provide better coverage throughout the downtown area. Regarding 621 Drayton Street, that is a truly a like for like with an improvement. Jody noted that we're replacing the concealment that's there to a color that's more or better blended into the environment. But I did want to also note, and it wasn't shown on the presentation, but the mirrored side of that building, the shroud is actually blown away. So the antennas are currently exposed. So we would be replacing and then also repairing, if you will, the other side for like and a net overall improvement. 110 East State Street, I think Chris said that well. We could certainly entertain doing a stealthing box or something of that nature to match the aesthetic of the parking deck structure. But really all that's happening here is extending the existing mount pipe to add a second antenna. So Jody, you got that correct. It would just be a second antenna. 13 East River, the visitor center, that's truly a no change. The equipment is currently in the visitor center sign. We would be opening that up, swapping out our antenna. That's it. Any other equipment mods are actually happening inside the building, so they wouldn't be visible. The pole, so 111 Bernard, I think Jody stated that well. The conceal fab modular shrouds that we're using can be color matched to any color we want, and they are flush mounted to the pole, so they won't be protruding very much. And then she correctly identified we are replacing the cable shroud and Omni antenna that is on top that can all be color matched. I did see one comment from the public that I wanted to address. You'll notice that majority of these poles are being fed from Georgia Power via an overhead line. We do have to lower that slightly and have already coordinated all of that with Georgia Power. The only reason we have to lower it is just the new clearance requirements from the top of pole to that line. There's no other reason, but it has already been coordinated and proved by Georgia Power. And I think with that, that would mean Chris here, we were happy to field more questions. But once again, wanted to reiterate, strictly modifications here. We are not proposing, other than the pole swap that was discussed, there are no new poles, no new brand new assets. These are all modifications, and that's it. Thank you.
Mr. Verizon, do you have any further comments to make on that?
No, but to address some of the questions that the board had, these are co-locatable. So if like our T-Mobile, AT&T, if they were to come in with a design, this was originally built in 2016. Between 2016 and 2018, this is what we consider an ODAS. We're converting into small cells because the equipment is out of end of life. And it's harder to support an ODAS as opposed to small cells, but those are co-locatable. I don't believe that any other carrier had signed up during that period, but from my understanding back in 2016 and through 18, that was a design that was agreed upon with the city to allow for additional carriers to co-locate on these same locations. And I don't believe anybody ever approached the city or Verizon to co-locate. So to answer your question about small cells, the need for them, yeah, these are built for co-location. Obviously, it would be another modification. The antennas have ports in them that, depending on which carrier, if they were to come in, you know, we all operate under different frequencies licensed by FCC, but the ports, there would be another modification to support them. We could, you know, work with the whatever carrier. So this, I want to answer that question because that came up.
Okay, so Mr. Helms, let's start with you. And do you have any questions for the applicant?
No, I have no questions.
Okay, Ms. Hammer.
No questions.
Ms. Woodfield.
Yes, I do have several questions. Thank you. First of all, I'm a retired architect, so I've been around a lot of this stuff. As I understand, the poles are a little easier for me to see than the buildings, and there's so many projects that it's a little daunting to try to understand each of them. Jody's had a lot of time with this and has done a wonderful job, but I think we're all a little confused about what we do have, you know, something to say over and what is completely being worked out with the city totally out of our control. But just to get down to the simple clarification, what I believe I'm seeing is that right now you have a straight pole that's about 12 inches in diameter that has a unit on top. And what you're going to do is go back to each of those poles and add three antenna.
Yeah.
And the antennas look like they're 36 inches high, 12 inches wide, and almost 8 inches deep.
That's correct. So those antennas are actually not just antennas, they're radios and antennas are all in one. And yes, that's a 5G.
So it's not like you're just taking one little box away and putting another box up there. I just want to be real clear. We're 36 inches, and it's a considerable piece. And you're proposing here that some of these may need to be angled down to the ground. It's on another slide in order to, you know, spread the waves the way you choose, the way you need to. So I'm just trying to point out these are not in our historic district a nothing piece of equipment. I mean, it is very different than what looks now like just exactly like a metal, nicely designed light pole.
You're correct that we are adding antennas and swapping out the 4G antennas, what you see at the top, the array of the three antennas that are radios and antennas combined is the 5G application. So you're correct. We are adding. It is modifying, but we are adding. But I believe, and the tilt, to address the tilt, we can look at that. There's electric tilts too with these antennas, so we don't necessarily have to, like, you know, point the antennas down. I have to look at that specific location, but we can adjust that.
Yeah, because right now it's saying the minimum size is 26 inches. And if you have to tilt them, they could be 47 inches.
And it makes it where there's electric tilt, so we can eliminate having to do the down tilt. That they're down tilts, and they are designed that way, but that's mechanical down tilt. We can change those antenna types in our design for electrical tilt only, which there's elements inside the antennas, and they move inside, basically, the elements, yeah. The diodes.
So, again, in this historic district, these are big objects, and sometimes there's no space above the light to put a 36-inch antenna. You know, if you look around at some of these light fixtures, your existing shroud is, you know, 18 inches, 24 inches above the light. So what would you do in an instance like that?
Chris, I can kind of field this if you don't mind. Yes. So a couple points of clarification there. You are correct in identifying on the screen here, not the cylindrical antenna on the top. That is the true like-for-like replacement. You are identifying what's just below there, the cluster of three antennas there. They are closer to 24 inches than 36. I don't know if the spec of the concealed fab shroud is in there, but it's a 27 inches tip to tip, with the bottom really 6 inches being more of a cable shroud to hide any cabling that needs to hit the antenna to feed. So the antenna itself is actually 21 inches. So just want to kind of clarify that height. And then Chris said it well, we can flush mount these so that the antenna orientation plan you see right in the middle of the screen would be more what we're looking like, which does have a diameter, if you went all the way around shroud to shroud to shroud, of 28 inches. But once again, closer to 2 feet in height and about 10 feet deep, and the full thing is shrouded and will be color matched exactly to the pole. And yes, it would be easy for us to avoid having any tilt to keep that object from protruding off the pole as much. I understand that concern.
Okay, then just another kind of easy way to summarize what you're doing on the buildings. Are you taking off a similar size piece of equipment and replacing with something that is almost the same size?
Yes. So if we want to go, well, really, let's just not talk about the parking deck. We'll do that one last. But the other buildings, it is truly a like for like. We are replacing the shroud over there in the park because we want to change the color. And the other one blew away, like I mentioned. But the shroud will be exactly the same size, just a new color per our pre-meeting and the request we received at that time. And then the other two buildings, yes, it's the shroud will not change. We're just pulling equipment out of it and putting new equipment in it. So visually speaking, it'll be a true no difference, which really just leads to the parking deck. And that one is probably the only one that there's a noticeable difference, since we are adding that second antenna at each of the locations on the parking deck. Did that answer your question?
Yes. Thank you very much for answering this
question. No problem.
Thank you.
And then so sorry, if I could jump back real quick, you had asked as well, if I jump back to the pole application, you had asked me, how do we negotiate the lights? Because I started to answer that, but didn't quite finish. So I mentioned that 24 inches is a better baseline than 36. And likewise, I mentioned earlier that we had coordinated with Georgia Power and have personally have visited all these sites and, you know, obtained measurements. So we've verified for each of those poles in the right of way that have the light that there's ample space for us. I think we may have had to relocate one light, but the rest, we had plenty of room.
Mr. Chairman,
thank you for that. No problem.
I have a question for the applicant, if I may. With these antennas, the difference between a 26-inch tilt and a 46 or a 36-inch tilt is pretty substantial, especially on a not so thick light pole that was designed to fit in with the historic nature of the district.
Yeah.
Is it correct that you can, if you can shroud those or color match, can you design them so that they don't in fact look like how they look now? I don't want to insult the way that they look now, but if you make it look like a decorative element on a historic light pole rather than a piece of mechanical equipment.
Hey, so a couple.
Go ahead, Trevor.
And you sure, Chris?
And part of that is, are you willing to put in writing as part of a condition of the approval that they will be in fact 26 inches and not 36 or 46 inch tilts?
Yes. So let me clarify one thing on the tilt first. So when we say tilt, and maybe, and apologies if you guys already know this, but what we mean is shading the antenna downward slightly, and those tilts degrees historically are anywhere from 0 to 5 degrees for small cell applications. So we're not talking about a lot of tilt at all. And that's why I would assert that we could probably design these to have zero tilt. So the 26 inches, all I'm referring to there is the height of the antenna, which that would not change regardless of what tilt we had. So I wanted to clear that up first. Second, if we did have a little tilt, I think what the other council person was referring to or had picked up in our plans would be the, if you're looking down from the top of the pole, imagine, you know, bird flying over, as you tilt those, the offset from the pole would increase. So that's maybe where the 36 inch piece was coming in. But once again, we should be able to design these to be flush mounted. So the antenna's smacked right up against the pole in a circle to minimize those offsets. So I wanted to clear that up first. Hopefully that helped. Second, you mentioned it not looking like you described it as mechanical equipment. So that's kind of the intent of those conceal fab shrouds. You would actually not see the antenna. I think that's subjective if you think that's, you know, appropriately concealed or not. But what we can do or what we could explore for, you know, the location off Barnard Street, and I'm happy to send the board samples, but we can do a full concealment that would put everything above the pole with the exception of the radio down low. The reason we try to avoid this is I think sometimes they end up not looking as good as this more lower profile conceal fab option. But if you could imagine, we extend the top of pole with a larger mount with a shroud that's cylindrical in nature, we could put both of the antenna arrays in there. The negative of that, though, is your top of highest appurtenance, as we call it, will go up 4 to 5 feet relative to what you see on our drawings today. And the diameter to fit all that, we are talking, I hate to say the word 36 inches again, but you're probably talking 30 to 36 inches in diameter. So we try to recommend this option to jurisdictions because it is much more lower profile and it's subjective, but in my opinion, it is a lower impact design and looks better, just in my opinion, but we could explore that other option if that's what you were suggesting.
Thank you for that. I think, just speaking for myself, I think since we're talking about 40 plus of these things, maybe seeing an example of what it would look like and what the options are to minimize the visual impact might be a good idea.
Hamer, just a quick question for staff. So hypothetically, we get the applicant to alter this design. We only have purview over this application at 111 Barnard Street, correct?
Correct, and the four others.
So let's say we push for them to make these alterations to this one design. We would only be able to enforce that for 111 Barnard Street. No, this is the only application in front of us. At 111 Barnard Street that involves a pole, correct?
Correct.
So we would make the applicant have to make all of these alterations just for one pole, and then they can kind of do whatever they want or proceed with this design
as shown in every other application throughout the city, since it is not in our purview.
Correct, but I'm also doing the Section 106 review, and it's, I provide comments on, you know, archaeological efforts for the new pole that they're putting in, and like-mindedness. So, I mean, this would be something that would filter over too.
Okay. But would you, for the other items in our purview, would we be able to enforce these modifications broadly across all of the applications, or we only have purview over 111 Barnard Street for this one pole?
You only have purview over 111 Barnard.
Okay.
And the other four.
So I just want, I guess, for my fellow board members to consider that if we, you know, make the applicant jump through hoops for this one instance, they wouldn't have to do that elsewhere, it sounds like. Correct?
It is something that could fall over into the Section 106 as comments that we provide, and we would be looking for them to address those.
Thank you.
So, Jody, just to follow up real quick before Ms. Nagel, you said that 111 Barnard Street and the four others. Okay, that didn't come across real clear, so I'm having you repeat it.
But it is, I'm just saying four others because there's five total that you're reviewing, right. But as Ms. Hammer says, technically, only one of those is a pole. The rest of them are on buildings.
Oh, they are? Oh, I thought some were a pole. Okay. All right. Ms. Nader?
I have a couple questions. One, yes, for staff, which, thank you. I was going to clarify which are the five, and now we understand four are in the sides of buildings, one is a pole. For the petitioner, he was saying none of them were going to be different, just, you know, changed in scale. I'm looking at, you know, for example, 123 West Charlton, which is the image we have in front of us right now. That's a big difference in size and scale and looks. I don't understand how that, what the petitioner just stated, which is nothing different, totally the same, same scale, same size. That's a big difference. Maybe my terminology is not as technical as the tilts and the things, but it's beefy. It's huge on the top. Plus, my biggest concern is a couple of these are being lowered. So now they're much more in the visual range in the historic district. A couple of these are right next to squares. I guess I don't love that we're hearing this with these 36 items here on the agenda, but we're also being told they're not within our purview. Then why are they on our agenda? I guess that's my first question to staff.
So when they were originally submitted, the applicant submitted them and as separate applications, and the posting went out as separate applications because that's normally what we do. And then after the fact, we had a meeting where we sat down with city staff, and it was the other ones are in the right of way. You as a body don't review in the right of way. You review buildings, you review structures, the HSMC reviews plaques and stuff like that. But if a new light pole were coming in, that's not in your purview to review. If a new,
sorry to cut you off. So if any private company comes and installs a pole in the public right of way, and I'm clarifying for this board and for the public, we have no say over visual compatibility of that pole whatsoever.
No, nor do you have any purview over sidewalks that are dug up or the streets that are dug up. That's outside of your purview.
Okay. And in terms of these being altered to being lowered and more visible, still not.
Still not. Still within the public right of way.
The 111 pole.
Which the city says that they don't know. Yes.
Right. Okay. And then my last question, I guess, which now is irrelevant, would be the bright signs that are posted on these. I guess, I mean, I'd still like to ask if, as a resident of the historic district, because I care, and a lot of these are visible from these squares, which are so important to us, they're being lowered, they're more visible, and where are these signs located exactly on these poles?
They're typically located, I mean,
But they're not.
They're typically located around the eye level.
Right. And are these going to be bigger? Or
I will let the.
I'm not sure what's.
The bright yellow signs. So you have a page where you have two signs, and one of them is.
I can feel this one too, Chris.
Those
radio
are up,
frequency.
Those are up by the antennas and by the radios.
So they're kind of a high level?
They're really small. They're like that.
And they're not changing in size?
They're not changing in size.
Those are currently there?
Those are currently there.
Yes, they're like 6 inches by 4 inches. They're very small. The green one will be around 11 feet up the pole. The yellow one will be about 6 feet below the antenna array. And then
those are to warn the idiots that'll climb these poles.
Those are FCC regulated signage. And then Jody, if you don't mind scrolling up, I think to page C4, if you have whoever has the screen, there should be a photo simulation. I think this visual will help. So the image on the left is. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
I mean.
So the image on the left is the, I don't recall which pole this is, but the pole today, and this is just a standard situation, right? And the image on the right would be with our modifications. And I just wanted to clarify once again a couple more things. When I had mentioned lowering anything, I'm only referring to the incoming power line. The pole height, the pole will not be messed with or raised or lowered by any means. We're just replacing the antenna up top, which could reduce or increase the top of highest appurtenance, depending on the height of that antenna. And then, of course, the second antenna array that we've talked about, which if you zoom in on the right, you can kind of see just above the light. But nothing is being manipulated on the pole itself as far as an increase or reduction in height, just in case that wasn't clear. And when I was saying no change, I was more referring to those building sites. So sorry if that got confusing, where there's already the shroud and we're just simply swapping out equipment. I do understand the poles. Yes, that second antenna array at the top there is an addition relative to what you see today. But once again, not lowering heights or adding heights or anything like that to the pole itself.
Last question. Thank you. In terms of this board looks at things in terms of a historic district, and we're constantly asking all petitioners to try and fit in with the visual compatibility of the town. It's very frustrating for us to be hearing something that, A, we don't have much of a say on, apparently most, and B, that really does disrupt the historic district and its beautiful lampposts that fit within the historic realm and blanket. And then we have this. It sounds to me like you're open to considering making these now that you're changing them and they're becoming larger, as is the case with the one we have in front of us right now at 123 West Charlton. It's quite a bit larger than what was there. I live around the corner, so I see it every day. I can't imagine it being this much larger on the top and not it being sticking out like a sore thumb. Sounds to me like you'd be open to considering making these a little bit more visually compatible with our historic district and not so mechanical looking right in the middle of a beautiful sort of area and square, regardless of the fact that we can't make you do that, apparently.
Yes, I think the answer simply is yes. And, the larger, once again, I want to. The pole will not be larger. I think we're just talking about those 2-foot antennas being added at the top. So we're talking just for perspective, the diameter of these poles today and will remain are, I think 12 to 14 inches. I don't know if it's exactly 13, but it's in that range. So they're already pretty large diameter poles, relatively speaking. So that antenna array up top, when it's all said and done, will be about 28 inches just in that 2-foot section. So that's all we're talking about. And then the antenna on top is a replace for like, for like. But yes, I mean, and Chris, this may be a better question for you, but, of course we're here to work with the city, not against.
I remember when these polls went up, and I'll save it for public comment, but they did change that specific pole. I remember when it went up, and it did change the nature of that corner quite a bit. It stuck out. It didn't look like the other lampposts. And now to say, well, it's okay, we're just replacing what's there. This post hasn't been there that long, because I do remember when it came up. I sound ancient when I say that. So it's an opportunity to make it better and not worse, is all I'm saying. Thank you.
So we just went through a historical review board last year in St. Augustine. I'm from Florida. We also did this through Winter Park in Florida. Not as historic, obviously, as Savannah. The two differences there is that we can we can make this all look like one. The only thing is it's going to create a fathead look of it. So, and then the only other way to get around that would be to increase the diameter of the poles, which would look worse. And we've seen that. We have a couple of those. How do you zoom out? So this is the only change. We could make this all look like one, but it's going to look just fatter. And it'll look, you know, because because we're not increasing, we're not changing the pull outs or anything like that. So I'm not sure you would like that. We can do some photo sims to show you what it looked like, and can show you some other similar installs that we've done, like up in Boston and in New Orleans and stuff like that, where you had more of a historic look, lights, to show you some options for that if you didn't like this. But to Trevor's point, we can get rid of mechanical. So let me see how I can, and what we could do. I'm trying to move there. I guess there's, oh, there it is. Sorry. We have options that we can present to you is what I'm getting to. But this right here, if you were to conceal all this, you wouldn't want it to slope down, because it'll still look like just like a big bulge on the pole. So the only other thing is would be conceal all this. And then it's going to look like a fat head at the top. So we can send you and staff different solutions of what we've done in other areas. Like in Winter Park, we put it all, like Trevor mentioned, we put all this into one. You know, we'd have to change this pole out, modify the pole, put a mount in, put these antennas in the mount, and then a shroud would go over this whole thing. But those look like fat heads. So, because in Winter Park that we did, but that diameter in Winter Park transitioned up. So these are, I think, 12 to 13 inch poles inside diameter. So it's just some thoughts, but we can send some solutions, ideas of what we've done in the past in multiple historic districts throughout the country. Yep.
Any other questions for the applicant?
I do have another question, if I may, Woodfield. Jody, could you bring up sheet C7 of equipment specifications?
C7, you said?
Yes, please. Okay, this is the one. So if you could just enlarge this, because this is one of the big cruxes of the matter, is exactly what these antennas are and what their size is. And this is what is in each of these packages, and it says they're 36 inches tall. And if you're now saying they don't need to be 36, but they're only 24, I think we should clarify that. Are these they're calling them antennas.
This is what you wanted enlarged, correct?
Yes.
Hey, yes. So I can field this one. Good question. So this is, this is just a radio, what you see here. So yes, this one is 36 inches tall, and I can't quite see the screen, but it should be about 7 or so inches deep. So Jody, if you have the screen, I'll point out where this is located on the pole. If you go to C4. So this is just a radio that is about halfway up the pole that will feed, go to C3, and my apologies. But if you see the call out, that white box kind of in the dead center of the pole, that is that piece of equipment, and there's only one of them. That is a radio that feeds the antenna on the top of the pole. Okay, and then the other item that was shown on C7 is the radio 4408, which is a second radio that is mounted. It's a lot, it's a little smaller. It's mounted internal to the pole. So if you kind of see the call out there where it says utilize existing radio hatch to install 4408 below the light. Yep. So that one will not be visible, but both of those radios, so the 4455 and the 4408, feed the antenna at the top of the pole. The 24 inch antennas are the what are those guys. Yeah. So good question. Hopefully that cleared it up.
It's Woodfield again. So the 36-inch proposed conceal fab radio, it's attached to the outside of the pole?
Yes, it'd be flush mounted, attached right outside the pole. No tilts or anything on that. So you would have that 7 5/8-inch protrusion.
And every pole would have this?
Every pole would have one, yes. And there may be some opportunity for us to get that inside the pole, but I don't believe there is, just with its size, unfortunately.
Jody, do you want to see if you can find the antenna for us then? Just so we're really...
Yeah, it's C6, Jody.
Say that again, I'm sorry.
Sheet C6. That right there. So that's the raw antenna. And then if you scroll down, that's the shroud that it's inside. So that if I'm looking at this spec here, what I've been kind of proposing and what we're going to do is, if you look at the kind of the profile views moving left to right, come over from one or two from the left on that bottom spec, and you can see the side profile where it shows banding around the pole. That's what we're suggesting, to keep it what I call flush mounted to the pole. So if you move your cursor over just slightly, Jody, I want to make sure they see what I'm talking about. That spec, the 4C5, the bottom row of profile views, the second one from the left is what I'm referring to. No, keep coming to 4C6. Sorry. That spec sheet. Yeah, that where your cursor is now. That's how the antennas will look on the top of the pole. That's what I mean, flush mounted. And when we were talking about tilt earlier, we can do electrical tilt. We don't need to actually lean the antenna forward like you see kind of on the right side of that same spec. So that's how we're going to be able to keep it tighter to the pole. And then likewise with the radio we looked at the beginning of me talking, same idea, flush mounted to the pole. That other radio will fit within the diameter of the pole itself, as a matter of fact. It's not as wide as the diameter of the pole, so it fits inside the profile.
And it looks like they're 10 inches deep, 10 and a half inches deep. 23 inches tall, 27 inches tall.
Yes, and that's what I was saying earlier. The antenna itself is 21 inches, I think. So the bottom six of that is, you'll see that it tapers. That's really just the cable management section of the mount. So the RF cabling that comes up internal to the pole and will come out directly into that shroud, so you will not see any exposed cabling. That's the intent of that extra 6 inches or so.
Okay. Well, I think we now see what you're proposing. And
okay.
Thank you for the explanation.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Do we have any other questions for the applicant? Okay.
We have five cards for speakers who are interested in the subject. So I'll call the first one, Bill Stanton.
Thank you very much. My name is Bill Stanton. I'm here with my wife, Colleen Stanton. We live at 345 Habersham. So full disclosure, one of the 36 poles is right outside of our house. In fact, the expanded antenna complex that's being proposed will be 12 feet from our bedroom window. So I do have a personal interest in this, but my interest is also broader with the town. So, and I just want to say thank you to the board for all the time, all your personal time that you devote to doing this. It's really appreciated in the town. And you know, the great work that you do is, we all notice it every time we walk through the town of Savannah. So thank you very much. With this project, I see that there are two issues. The first one we haven't really talked much about, and that's safety. And the second is the project contributing to or detracting from the beauty of Savannah's historic district? So I'll do the first one as the safety one first. These proposed radios and antennas emit what they call radio frequency electromagnetic radiation. That's a fact. These antennas emit that. What the question then becomes is, these antennas, what level radiation are they emitting? And that should be easy to find out. And then the second question is, at what levels is that radiation harmful to people? It could be they're far under those limits, but we don't know. We don't have the data. So a question maybe Verizon could answer is, was there an RF compliance study completed? You know, do we know what the RF power density will be with the new proposed antennas that will be installed compared to what it is today? Maybe we have that data, but it'd be helpful to have that in a concise table so the board can make an informed decision about the safety. I do know that I did see in the packet those signs, the warning signs, the yellow signs that they flashed up before. And those are going to be about 11 feet, according to the diagrams, 11 feet above the ground, bright yellow. So as you're walking from, in our case, Troop Square, and you're walking down Habersham Street, you're going to see the mast that I'll talk about in a second. And then you're going to see a bright yellow sign that reads, caution, radio frequency fields beyond this point, capital letters, may exceed the FCC occupational exposure limit. You know, not a really pleasant sign that we want to see have people see as they walk through the streets. And there's going to be 36 of these poles in town. So that ties into the aesthetics a little bit. We talked about it today. So I guess what I summarize from that is, the current antenna that's on the pole in front of our house, it's going to be about 20 inches high and about 8 inches in diameter. That will be replaced by another antenna that's about the same height and about, I'm sorry, the first one's 8 inches currently. It's going to be expanded to 11 inches in diameter. So that antenna that's being replaced is going to be bigger than the ones that's there. That's step one. Number two, we saw in the diagrams down lower, closer to the ground, there are going to be three more antennas put around it. And each one of those has a mass roughly equivalent to the antenna that's at the top. And now today, I didn't pick it up when I looked through the drawings, there's going to be a fifth antenna placed on the side of the pole about 11 feet off the ground. So the mass of the antennas in this proposal is going to be about 5x, five times the mass of the current antenna. So this is not a like-for-like mass replacement on any of these poles.
Mr. Stanton, yes. I'm sorry, I forgot to mention we give 3 minutes to speakers, and your time went up. But I'll give you a minute to wrap up.
I'll wrap then. So there's not one or five of these proposed poles. There's 36 of them all around town. So I request that the board vote no today on this application to give the engineers more time to submit the minimum data you need on the safety so you can make an informed decision on the safety of this project. Give Verizon a little bit more time to come up with maybe some more creative ideas and alternatives for this proposal. And give the public, we only had 15 days from the time these signs were put up, give the public a little bit more time to absorb this and to weigh in on it. So thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for your comment.
Next speaker, I have a card for Stephen Gerber. I'm sorry. There you are. Okay. Can you talk to the mic, please? Can you go to the mic, please?
I was asking if you could call my colleague, Ms. Malone France, because she was here first and was at the pre-hearing meeting.
Did she sign on the card?
I did, yes,
sir. Malone, there it is. The rest of the, missed the hyphen. Okay, there you go. All right, so Ms. Malone France, is that right?
Thank you. Yes, sir. Thank you so much. My name is Catherine Malone France, and I own an apartment in the Lafayette Condominium, which is at 321 Abercorn Street, located on Lafayette Square. And as Steve indicated, I'm a member of the Condo Association's board. The proposed cell node on the existing light pole at 321 Abercorn is a mere 14 feet from my apartment and other apartments. The American Cancer Society asserts that 30 feet is the minimum safe distance from this type of cell node, and the proposed installation is less than half that distance from my apartment and other apartments. This is a serious life safety issue, and it is not acceptable. I thank the board for their allowing me to get that on the record. But let me turn and focus briefly on what is in your purview as the Board of Review. I have a long career in historic preservation. I have a master's degree in historic preservation from the University of Georgia, the greatest of all historic preservation programs. This proposed installation is not only dangerous, it is visually significant at such a prominent location, and it is not visually compatible. These new attachments to these poles, you all have been fairly kind to them. I would describe them as being like attaching large pig's ears to a light pole that was originally and carefully selected to match the character of the historic district. This is, after all, the National Historic Landmark District in Savannah, Georgia. I want to note, too, that I do not believe that the Board of Review or the City of Savannah is powerless in this matter, as some might believe. First, state law makes clear that a new co-location must respect local preservation standards, which this does not. Second, there is nothing in state law that prevents the City of Savannah from proposing an alternative location. And speaking of 321 Abercorn, there are several other utility poles in the square and on its perimeter that would not only be far better aesthetically, but it would move the cell node away from private residences. But more broadly, I think the concerns I have raised about 321 should be considered for other poles, and you should be able to consider the total visual impact across the district. I am so grateful for the chance to speak today. It was not completely clear to me what action the Board of Review would be taking on the node at 321 Abercorn, but this is the only public forum that has been provided for citizens to raise these very legitimate concerns. I respectfully ask the Board of Review to reject this proposal as inappropriate, and to, especially at 321, ask Verizon to move this cell node to a more appropriate, visually compatible, and safer location as a considerate partner in our community. But further, I urge the Board of Review, the Planning Commission, and the City of Savannah to table any further consideration of this issue until Verizon has provided the more information and has addressed these very legitimate concerns. Thank you.
Thank you. By the way, we have a vacancy on this board.
I am also happy to provide that state law citation if it would be helpful.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Gerber.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, board members. Thank you for your consideration of this important issue. I, too, with my wife, own a unit in Lafayette, and I, too, as with my colleague Catherine, are on board of managers. You've been very, very patient with us. I want to reiterate everything Catherine has said. You will be sitting in Lafayette Square, where next week the St. Patrick's Parade is going to come right down Abercorn, go the wrong way up Charlton, pass right by this particular pole, 15, 20 feet from the corner. You can be sitting on the benches in Lafayette Square, and you probably will see the yellow warning signs. You may wonder what that is. And there are at least 8 units in our building on the Macon Street side that are within 30 feet of this proposed location. Is it going to be pretty? No. Do I understand that we need cell service? Yes. There are no less than 5 locations around Lafayette Square where this would be less conspicuous. I understand the board may not have jurisdiction, but you have an action in front of you. You can table the current application and perhaps get the city involved in terms of rethinking where and how these poles will look in our National Historic District. I thank you again for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Gerber. Okay, so the next speaker is Chris. Oh, thank you.
Thank you very much, board, and appreciate the opportunity to talk today. So I love our neighborhood. I love the historic nature of Savannah Squares. In fact, it was Savannah Squares that drew me to Savannah. I walk through Lafayette Square every morning and walk back every morning and walk in the afternoon. I just want you to know human beings are used to looking up a pole and seeing a pole taper off. This is not a tapering of a pole. So to make it visually inobtrusive versus obtrusive, that's the wrong word, but anyways, you understand what I'm trying to say. It's just impossible on the current configuration. And maybe I did the wrong calculation, but this is going to be about 3 to 4 feet wide, about 2.5 feet tall. That's fairly wide on top of a pole that every human being is used to looking up a pole and seeing poles taper. So it is going to be very visually there for everybody that walks through our square, and not only our square, but all of the Savannah Historic District. And if you're not in purview to help protect the beauty of our historic district, then who is? Who do we as residents go and talk with to make sure that something like this does not happen without the appropriate visual aspects in consideration, let alone the health concerns that this brings up? Thank you very much for allowing me to talk. I have shortened my conversation a great deal because these people appropriately covered most of the issues. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And the last card I have is Andrew Jones. Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon. Andrew Jones, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I certainly agree with many of the things the speakers have said. What seems to be missing here is an architect or a designer, someone with an aesthetic sense, guiding the engineers. It's interesting to have the concept of a shroud, and perhaps the MPC can explore this with them with respect to all of the towers. I mean, it seems to me that an architect or someone with an aesthetic sense could find a solution here. And I'm just going to toss one out to you. But one obvious one is to treat the post as a column with a big urn on the top, and the urn would be able to accommodate that equipment. Now, I'm not saying this is the only solution, but there are many creative solutions. Something like this would be aesthetic. It would echo the classical look of the city. So if there's some way to have someone in the process, perhaps with the MPC staff, who can come up with some designs that would be attractive, that might be a way to solve some of this issue. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Are you an architect in addition to a lawyer?
I'm an artist.
Okay. Good idea. It should be considered. Okay, is there anyone else in the audience who didn't fill out a speaker card that would like to speak on this? Okay, thank you all for filling out the card and speaking. So at this point, we will close. I forgot. Verizon and I guess Kimley Horn get a chance to rebut. But any public comment you'd like? You have?
How you doing? Chris Films again with Verizon. We're governed by FAA and FCC. And every one of our sites is governed by the emissions radio frequencies. The signs are already there. The signs are not changing. It's just the same signs. It's just that... So they're already currently there. I'm not a doctor, so I'm not going to speak to anything, any reports or anything that's been done on emissions, but we are governed by FAA, FCC, and what the output of our radio frequencies are. And the other thing, the comment about that, we every single site, regulatory compliance along with FAA and FCC, the EME, which is electric emission studies, are done for all the sites. And the sticker colors are a result of that. So basically, what you're seeing on the poles with the yellow stickers are that it is possible that it could be emissions outside of occupational. That's just what the reader of the sign is. And what that means is that if they were replacing lights or any time thing to notify. If you're physically within like a foot of an antenna, and that way we can turn down sites, and that's what we do. We turn down sites if they were ever to modify or change an antenna on lights, all that throughout the United States, we're on all those. So that just trying to explain a little bit about what that meant from a safety perspective. So, and we will look, and we are open to looking at architectural designs as far as more concealment. But that's it. And Trevor?
I don't think I have anything to add, maybe with the exception that the yellow sign that was cited, that should be high on the pole. That's not at eye level. I believe someone made a comment about that. So but other than that, Chris, I think you said everything well. And thank you, everyone, for your time.
The drawing indicates it's lower.
Okay, is that all? All right. So at this time, we'll enter the board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted and the applicant has finished its rebuttal. So let me start on my left, Ms. Gwynn.
I'll just reiterate what I said earlier. I appreciate members of the public and the concern and taking time out of your day to come speak before us. I think, you know, when you're looking at something in this volume and this scale, that will be pervasive throughout the historic district, we owe it to our residents and ourselves to make sure that, we push for the best design that we can to preserve the integrity of the historic district. And I think as we've seen just from discussions today, making important points, like making sure that they are all flush mounted and not tilted or sprawled out to the full 36 or 46 inches is important and impactful. And making sure that however they're being concealed to make them look less mechanical is reviewed by a board or a body that deals with visual compatibility and design elements. And so I think, you know, for me today, I don't feel like we have enough clarity on those answers or consensus with the other body that's going to review the ones that are in the public right of way to make sure that there's consistency throughout. So I would suggest that we continue this to allow the other board or the city to weigh in to make sure that there is consistency throughout the district and that the design and the visual impact on the historic district and the residents is considered as part of their decision.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Nagel?
Nagel, I think if we just summarize it to what we're asked to be doing on this board today, then we look at it objectively and say, well, we're here to protect the National Historic Landmark District. And whether that is a private company in a public right of way or not, it's still being presented right here in our agenda, therefore, with the responsibility to say it does not fit within our National Historic Landmark District, and we do have the opportunity to make it better. From what I'm looking at, we're making it worse. Not a lot of effort has been putting into saying, well, this isn't just, you know, a mini mall down in, you know, some very modern area. It's important to respect it. And so I think that I agree with Ms. Quinn if we would continue this and allow for developing better ways that this could be done where the neighbors and the residents could accept it. These neighbors that are looking out their window and seeing these things that bought into the National Historic Landmark District that pay enormous taxes to live here, and now they're looking out their window, for example, in the case of 123 West Charlton. I think about the person on that corner all the time. Now they're looking at this enormous thing that is it looks like a powerful mechanical device. They bought that unit to look onto a square in a historic district. And now that poor person is out there looking at this device that, like the gentleman in the public said, well, who do we go to? Who protects the residents here? And this is a board that is supposed to do that. So I could not be on board approving this the way that it is. Thank you.
Mr. Coleman.
Yes. I've had the pleasure or displeasure of being involved on MPC through the whole process of the original cell towers and these small cell towers when they came in front of the board and had to be reviewed. And believe me, it was not something that was taken lightly by those boards at that time. It's a very complex issue, a lot of technical items that go within it, and a lot of federal issues that you had to deal with. And the outcome was to try and come up with the best solution for our city, which it was the best for our city, to accommodate those elements within the city. I think that with these changes, yes, it should be taken a look at to see how these new technologies impact the visual impact of our community. But to think that we can't have them. One of the reasons the small cell towers exist is because without them, you had the big cell towers that had to come downtown. Now, do we want to see those here as opposed to these smaller ones? There's a compromise that has to happen, and the locations are something we're going to have to probably take a look at a little bit more, but it's not this board that does that. I think we do have ordinances and things that the city does have. It's not a vacuum that this is a part of, and we can request that there's a little bit more, a greater in-depth look at these locations as we move forward, because this is a change. But to think that they're going to go away, they're not going to go away. I think that we have to find out how they're going to work, because if they're not on your corner, they're on someone else's corner. So there is no place where no one's going to be impacted by these towers. So we have to start trying to think what's the best thing, not only for our individual thoughts, but also the community as a whole, that we have to accommodate these things. So we appreciate everything that's being said by the persons who have taken the time out of their day to come here, but understand that each and every person on this board and who volunteer their time on behalf of Savannah and all of us take this seriously. And we will do the best we can as members of this board to see with MPC staff whether they can have the city take a look at it a little bit more. And on the commentary of the potential of having architects take a look at the top of these towers and all the rest of that. And as an architect, I'll tell you that to try and put that equipment up at the top of a pole probably would not work. So I think that that's not a reasonable solution. There has to be something else that works with the equipment that has to be accommodated in some way. And for us to be reasonable about what we're facing here, and they're not going to disappear. So we're going to have to start looking at what the real requirements are and for the technology of Verizon to say, hey, we do have alternatives we can offer you and not just say this is the most convenient thing. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Thank you. Ms. Rowland.
I agree with all the previous comments of my fellow board members, and I do think the design can be better. And I would think that Verizon does have several different options that they can present to us since they have done this in other historic cities. And I think it would be great if those were submitted to the staff and to this board. Thank you.
Ms. Woodfield.
Yes, Woodfield. Yeah, I appreciate all the comments. And the summing up from the board members, it is complex and it's a lot of installations. And I appreciated the back and forth with the Verizon and Kimberly Horn people and, you know, understanding that maybe there's some, ways we can work together. We're certainly motivated to work together to get a better resolution of these everyday items, but do them so they're compatible with our historic district. I just want to, in addition to all the comments that I agree with, maybe point out that it seems very premature for us on this commission to take these five things that we have some power over and declare whether we're going to approve them or not. I think that our consensus, it's certainly my consensus, is that the bigger issue are the 36 big towers in town. And whatever that solution is, then we can apply it to these five towers. But for us to, you know, do a solution now on the little bits on the buildings, I think is premature and it's, you know, the tail wagging the dog. So I do feel like this is a project that needs to be continued. There needs to be a lot more work done on it, a lot of it outside this group. But we certainly encourage, as you hear, that there's a very strong component of compatibility and historic and remembering our historic district for this new technology change. Thank you.
Ms. Hanner?
I would also like to say I agree with my fellow board members on this issue. However, I do feel like there are several instances that were under our purview that seem pretty cut and dry and easy to approve. The 621 Drayton, it's just a replace in kind, but using a darker shroud, so it's going to be less visible. The One West River Street, I feel like we can approve. It's not visible at all. And then the 200 West Congress Street is another replacement in kind. And which one's on our building? Oh, sorry.
110 East.
Yeah, so that one is a little dicey. It's kind of opening up the doors of how much more equipment can we add to this facade, you know? So I feel like that one we should continue to see if the applicant can provide a different solution. And then again, the whole issue with all of the towers, I think I agree with everyone's comments that I think there has to be a better solution there. And we want to see the applicant provide other options. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi.
Mr. Helms.
I have, I guess, a couple of comments. One, we're only all the questions addressed to the other 35 towers
should really be addressed to the city manager, because he's the guy who's got some purview over those. We don't have any purview over, we only have purview over some of these. And whether you like it or not, we live by the ordinances. The ordinances say we don't have any control over the right of way. And, so, you know, I'm happy to continue things. But if you want to put down, if you want to put big cell towers, we have a couple of big cell towers in this town. One of them is like an Abercorn and Hall or roughly there, and it sticks up way above the skyline. We don't really need those downtown. So you have to figure out some accommodation for cell towers. Now, I'm happy to continue this, but cell towers are a necessity, whether we like it or not. So that, those are my comments. Oh, and I have to leave here in about 1 minute for an appointment.
Okay. Ms. Gwynn, do you have any more comments?
I'll just say I don't disagree that we need the technology, but I do think that it is our responsibility to make sure that we push the applicant to deliver a solution that is least disruptive, most compatible, and acceptable to this board and respectful of the historic district, and nothing further.
Okay, Ms. Nagel?
No further comment.
Mr. Coleman?
No other comment.
Ms. Rowland?
No additional comments.
Okay, Ms. Woodford?
No further comments.
Okay. Ms. Hammer?
No further comments.
And last but not least, Mr. Helms?
No comment.
Okay. I do have a comment or two. I have to say I'm a little confused. And I think we do need about the four, or at least the one on the street one that we have here. I think we need more information about the whole design and the impacts on it and so on. So I agree with that. I lived through the wars with Mr. Coleman of the previous work many, many times. I think that big tower downtown, by the way, was an old radio station that used to be right on the corner there of a couple streets. So I think there's a need for more information. Another comment or question really is, so if we continue this, just say hypothetically, what does that do to the other, whatever, number 36? Is that, are they already approved by the city? No? So, but we have no say to say, I guess we could say the city work on those some more with us as part of our motion, perhaps? I don't know. Jody?
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond. I think I wouldn't suggest making it a part of our motion because we can't compel the city or other boards to do anything. But I think you as the chairman can write a letter on our behalf, and put that in the public record and the public purview that we have pretty significant concerns. And we want to ensure, compatibility and cooperation on this. And I think that would probably accomplish.
Okay. Well, that is a good idea. And my question was really to be a question about what the status of those are. But Jody?
As I understand it, it still has to get submitted by to Development Services and reviewed by them. Mm-hmm. And then it goes to the MPC board.
It does? It does go to the MPC board?
Mm-hmm. That's my understanding.
Before the 31st.
Is that Melanie chiming in?
I am, yeah. It'll be on the MPC board on the 31st.
You could hear it.
You're not clear. Sorry, Melanie. Can you just repeat that again? Oh, Pam. Sorry, Pam.
That's okay. It'll be on the MPC board's agenda on the 31st.
Okay. All right. That clarifies. Thanks. My last comment is when we have an item or when Horizon slash I just went totally blank on the consulting firm.
Kimley Horn,
long, 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 long time ago, I interviewed with them for a job back in Florida. But Mr. Kimley Horn, if you're still there, when we do this stuff here, we want you in the room with us so we can see you. Although you could, we can use the technology, it just doesn't come across. It's to your benefit to be here and address the board directly. So those are my three comments, and I will open to a motion by the board at this point.
This is Gwen. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review continue the petition of file number 26-000710 for COA for cell tower modifications to the April 8th meeting to allow coordination with the city and other boards on consistent design throughout the historic district and to allow the applicant to modify and present some alternative designs.
Make that.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor to continue this agenda item and to and the other things that Ms. Quinn said. Is there a second?
Nagel, second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded.
Excuse me, before you vote, I just want you to know that the MPC probably cannot get involved in the design of the towers. What's probably going to end up happening is it'll go on the consent agenda for them.
Somebody has to repeat that for me. Okay. I couldn't hear it.
Hold on a second.
Melanie said that the MPC would typically not be involved in the design.
Hold on 1 second. This is Sally.
I'm with Pam, and this is Sally Helm with Development Services. So we are going to hear it March 31st, but the reason we're hearing it March 31st is we were waiting for your board to hear for those COAs first. We do not review designs, so that will not be part of our review or decision.
So that's where the conundrum is, because we review design, but we can only review design on things that are in our purview. So it's kind of, you're putting us in a chicken and an egg situation.
Okay. Anybody need to ask that question to make it clear?
I think it's part of that part of my motion to allow coordination with the city and the other boards. It's the city's going to have to weigh in on this and say that whatever design is decided for the lampposts and the positioning and all of that is decided by our board, because we do have visual compatibility as our purview, and then that's uniformly applied throughout.
So it comes back here and then we approve it and then we move on.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I have an alternative suggestion, because we do have purview over what's in front of us. And if you take an action on what's in front of you, it forces the hand on what happens beyond that. Rather than trying to kick this down the road, you could not approve this right now, and that means these ones don't work, which means they have to deal with it. To me, that's a more productive solution than saying we're going to coordinate with these boards, which could take months, you know, and not have this thing move forward. So we can act on what's in front of us and make a decision on whether we consider these to be visually compatible from the board standpoint. That is under our purview. It doesn't involve anyone else, and we can take a action one way or another on this petition.
Okay. Now, somebody help me with Robert's rules. Is that a amended motion or a replaced motion? Do you have to vote on the first motion first and then hear another one, or?
I'm sorry, I wasn't making a motion. I was just adding a comment to that.
We have a motion and a second on the floor. And Ms. Gwynn, would you like to vote, please?
Nay.
Yay?
Nay.
Nay. Nay to your motion? Okay. Ms. Nagel?
Nay.
Okay.
I guess that'd be nay for me too. It's
rolling. Okay, Ms. Whitfield?
Nay.
Ms. Hammer?
Nay.
And Mr. Helms?
No.
So that was an A2 down there. Okay, so this motion was defeated unanimously, I guess.
I'll
And
I'll propose a new motion. Sure. Yeah. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review deny the petition number 26-00710 COA based on the incompatibility of the project as outlined in the ordinance and the visual compatibility standard.
Okay, so the recommendation by Ms. Gwynn is to deny the application. Is there a second?
Sorry, and that we're including all of those locations?
Just the ones
that are the 621 Drayton Street, River Street, 200 West Congress Street, 110 East State Street, and 111 Barnard Street.
Okay, that was clear. Was that your second? Yes?
No.
No? Oh, okay.
Rowan, second.
All right, thank you, Ms. Rowan. So it's been moved and seconded to deny the application. Ms. Gwynn?
Yay.
Ms. Nagel?
Aye.
Ms. Coleman?
Nay.
Nay
aye.
From Coleman, okay.
Rowan, aye.
Thank you, Rowan. Aye.
Woodfield, aye.
Hammer?
Nay.
Helms, aye.
Aye, so we have two nays and one, two, three, four. Okay, the motion passes. I think it was 5-2, right? One, two, three, four.
Yes.
One, six. Okay. 5-2. So thank you, gentlemen and ladies, and the comments from the public. Appreciate it. So that takes us to, I see there are no approved staff reviews listed. No work performed without certificate of appropriateness. Really? There's no work out there that you're citing for that? Caitlin?
I'm sure there is, but we don't have anything to report on this.
Listed, okay. Then the stamp drawings and inspections report, they're listed there. The next Historic District Board of Review pre-meeting is at on April 8th at noon, and the next HDRB meeting is April 8th at 1 p.m. So if there's no other input, we will adjourn.